The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Well, how are you getting on?
Good, thanks, lads. Good to be with you.
So we were thinking the other day about 2009 and how the France win in Croke Park kick-started a Grand Slam that year, but how it was also this Ireland win in the middle of this sea of French dominance. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you remember going into that game, about how it was, I think, 2003 maybe, the last time Ireland had actually got over the line and beaten France?
Yeah, look, I guess it was my first proper season into the Six Nations squad. I got my first cap in 2007 under Eddie O'Sullivan, but hadn't really featured. So obviously coming into that Six Nations, it was kind of all new to me anyway. So that kind of ambivalence of youth and inexperience probably meant that I wasn't really too weighed down by any kind of the history of it. And there was a few young fellas after coming in as well, like Jamie Heaslip had a few more caps than me, obviously, Tommy Bodie's guys, Luke Fitzgerald. So I think those guys probably didn't have that weight of history. Obviously the likes of Trico, Paulie, all these guys, yeah, they had maybe been beaten by France for the previous few years, but all these guys had beaten France too. So I think going into the game, we kind of believed that we would win the game. So history really wasn't a factor.
That game is kind of under-remembered a little bit, sorry, Owen, because it was one of the greatest performances that we've ever had. We scored these amazing tries, and it was like, because it's the start of the tournament and we end up winning with the drop goal, it's always the drop goal that gets replayed, but maybe we should spend a bit more time looking back on just that match. What do you remember about the game itself?
Yeah, similar to you. Up until I knew I was coming on the show yesterday, very little. So I literally got to Google the starting lineups and actually then saw there was a clip on YouTube on it. So I watched that. So that obviously brought back the memories, and they start kind of vividly coming back then. So obviously the Jamie Heaslip try obviously stands out in the first half. You know, we've got a line out, I think, in our half, maybe on our own, 40 yards from our own line, and played it wide. I think Tommy Bowe made a bit of yardage up the left-hand side of the pitch into their half. I've got the ball and missed pass to Paulie. He kind of did a swivel. I kind of put it behind him, which wasn't unusual for me. And he threw a pass to Heaslip then. And Heaslip beat two or three men with his feet to go under the sticks, like so. And I suppose looking at it then, even on YouTube, you know, the crowd went mad. So that's the kind of thing you miss at the moment with the crowd and the influence of the crowd. And I suppose that buzz and that pickup that we got from the crowd that day. So that was probably a standout moment of the game.
It's interesting that you talk about the positive energy that was around the camp that year, I guess, the change of coach, the fresh blood, and I guess that beautiful ignorance to what France had done to Ireland in the previous couple of years, not knowing what it was like to lose to France, was surely a positive for you and for the other new players in the squad that season.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I suppose previously, obviously 2006, 2008 for Munster, my own personal experience is we'd beaten Biarritz in a final and beaten Toulouse in a final. So I hadn't that experience of losing to the team, and look, I flicked through their team last night. Obviously, you had, you know, likes of Potrino at 15, Medard was 14, you had Josian in the centre, you had Boxis at 10, but like the pack was Harry Nardiki, Dusatoir, Cheval, Nalé. So like they were littered with top class internationals at the time. But like you said, I suppose that freshness and that ambivalence and lack of experience that maybe one or two of us had maybe help the other lads a little bit as well.
Yeah, like for the thing that sometimes I think gets forgotten about that game is how good France were at times in the first half, I think. I mean, if you were looking through it on YouTube yesterday, Tomas, you might be able to explain just how slick they were in that opening 40 minutes.
Yeah, look, there was times we were chasing shadows, and looking back on it now, there was times, you know, I was obviously doing a lot of cover defence and trying to cover if there was line breaks. They made a couple of line breaks out of nothing, and I think they had a pretty flowing move as well from their own half, line break, which ended with, I think it was Harry Nardiki scoring in the left corner. And that put us, I think it was 4 or 6 points down at that stage, and a couple of Rodge penalties kept us in the game in the first half, really, until Jamie scored that try, kind of maybe, I don't know what it was, 35 minutes into the first half. But yeah, like we were kind of chasing shadows at certain stages of the first half, but I think our kind of scramble defence under Les Kiss at the time was really good. So yeah, that first half we were definitely under pressure, But I think our tries came at pretty opportune times.
I've just watched our Nordicy try after 13 minutes. They're like the Barbarians. It's amazing. France were unbelievable.
Yeah, they were handy enough, all right. So like you said, even I had forgotten kind of the significance or I suppose the achievement of beating them and beating a side of that calibre, I guess. So yeah, you're right. The rest of the Six Nations and obviously the last game probably ends up getting a lot of the limelight. But yeah, it was looking back at it last night, it was pretty cool.
It's Croker as well, obviously. That's the other thing. It's like the stadium looks unbelievable.
Yeah, look, unbelievable experience to play in Croke Park. Obviously, I kind of grew up wanting to play there and try and emulate my old fella and play there in the Red of Munster or Red of Cork. Never managed to do it senior, but luckily did it minor. And then obviously to play international rugby there was unbelievable. So sorry, lads, I've got a little man here.
Now you're grand. It's happening to everybody.
It was a privilege to play there, definitely. And look, 82,000 Irish fans packed in to Croke Park, and you know, it was unbelievable to experience that.
That point you make about the injection of youth into the side, I'd kind of forgotten. I think Heaslip obviously had felt like he had something to prove because he'd been left out of the World Cup squad famously by Eddie O'Sullivan and I think Tommy Bowe as well. It helps to have an injection of youth into the team. That whatever that generation is, like, which we're kind of lacking a little bit at the moment. It's a very similar team that we have right now to the team that didn't succeed at the World Cup and by their own standards look back on the World Cup as a failure. Maybe we just need to bite the bullet and inject three or four new players into the starting team in particular.
Yeah, look, you could say, like, yeah, there's an argument for that, definitely. I suppose there's no one really, I suppose, jumping out. Look, I suppose he's trying it maybe with Casey to an extent, on the panel. Like, he hasn't played any, starting even the Heineken Cup game. Obviously, you know, you've Harry Byrne, then there's a lot of talk about him. I haven't seen enough of him to play, but he's highly rated. Like, so do you just, you know, pick one or two of them for a couple of games in the Six Nations and see how they go? Yeah, there's an argument for that, definitely. Similar, like the likes of Coombs down in Munster, do you just catapult them straight in? But I think you kind of have to earn it too. And like you talk about all those guys like Tommy Bowe, obviously Heaslip, these guys, they, you know, they were playing for their province and they were winning starting Heineken Cup games and winning Heineken Cups. With Munster in that case, obviously Leinster went on to win a hell of a lot too. So I think you kind of have to earn your stripes to an extent too at provincial rugby. And obviously the lack of a Heineken Cup is handicapping Andy Farrell in that scenario, whereby he doesn't get to see maybe the younger guys, tested in a full metal environment. Obviously, there still is a big step up from European rugby to Test rugby.
Just one last one on 2009, then, Tomás. This is at the very start of a campaign. I think if you look at the campaigns 6 years either side of this, you probably have a situation where France always brought the table down at least on a Grand Slam. There was never going to be the possibility of a Grand Slam because France existed. So surely after that first game, beating France for the first time since 2003, you were looking around the dressing room thinking, God, this thing might actually happen.
Yeah, exactly. Like you had England to come to Croke Park as well. So your away games were Italy, Scotland and Wales. So, you know, we were very, very confident of beating Italy and Scotland with greatest respect to those two teams. So we kind of knew that, you know, if we could manage to beat England at home, that it would all be set up for a Grand Slam decider against Wales. And I guess the history between Ireland and Wales and obviously Gatland involved at the time, a one-off game for a Grand Slam, yeah, we would have fancied it. So, yeah, like you said, that, I suppose, momentum that French victory gave us and then the possibility of, you know, a pathway to a Grand Slam was significant, definitely.
Tomás, we were speaking to Ronan O'Gara a few weeks ago about Antoine Dupont, about the scrum half position in France. And I guess as somebody who's played a few games in France yourself, could you just first of all outline how important the scrum half is to playing rugby in France, to being on the French team?
Yeah, look, it's a position obviously they revere. And Le Petit General, the folklore around that position is massive in France. Actually, I played my last game of professional rugby against Dupont. I was playing with Montpellier and he was with Castres at the time before he had just before he had was moving to Toulouse, and he made a line break and a little offload to basically decide that game too. So like, yeah, he's a phenomenal player. He has seems to have everything. You know, his ability to break the line. You see, he's deft little kicking game the last day, and he's got a good pass. So he's very, very lively around the pitch. Like his impact at international rugby has been outstanding. Definitely the form nine in the world, if not the form player in the world. So, but I think you'll see a lot of kind of influence and concentration on the Irish team. He'll be a marked man this weekend. So I'd be very, very surprised if he causes us too much problems. I think that, you know, it'll be like drilled into this Irish team, you know, how important he is to their game plan. And you might see him put on his arse a bit, you know, if he does bring the ball to the line, it'll pass away. You'll see them put him on the ground, slow him down and make sure he takes 4 or 5, 6 seconds to get up off the ground. But yeah, he's been a phenomenal player since he broke onto the scene.
Was it obvious in that game that he was a genius when you were playing against him, even when he was that young?
Yeah, it was obvious there was something about him. The line break that he made, he bounced off one of our back rows, like, and the size of him, and like 5 foot, nothing scrum half, you don't bounce off back rows and then go 40 yards before offloading to whoever it was to win the game. And he had that attitude that all kind of cocky confidence from halves have. He was highly rated sign, but when you do come up against the fella, you kind of know lads who have that X factor, definitely. And that X factor that he had definitely was that ability to bring the ball to the line and make a line break. So, kind of knew that he'd do all right for himself.
Is there something about a scrum half that allows him to bounce off a back row, or is it just brute strength?
I guess he's low centre of gravity helps, but he's power. Yeah, look, he's a powerful unit for the size of him. So yeah, look, you know, once a bigger man tries to get lower to the ground, obviously he loses his centre of gravity, his power axis. So it's more difficult for him to execute the tackle in that case. So obviously Dupont in that situation utilised that to his advantage. But yeah, he just has a hell of a lot of power for a man his size.
How I mean, apart from hitting him if he moves to the line, what else can you do to try and prevent somebody of his talent having a massive influence on the game?
I think just the integrity of your line. So you're not leaving holes in around the rock. So, you know, your whatever they call it, pillar, post, your 10, 20, 30 defenders, that they're defending as a trio, and that they all know their role. So obviously, if he breaks, you leave him to the second man so he doesn't pop an inside pass. So you're just basically ensuring that trio around the rock are really communicating and talking up and saying, oh, you have Dupont or you have the inside runner or whatever it is. So communication is key. And you might find as well that they might assign maybe R7 or whoever it is, whether it's Van der Flier or whoever, to maybe target him once or twice. Look, that's international rugby. No one will admit that in public, but you will see him put on his arse once he gets the ball and brings it to the line. And then, of course, line speed is key as well. So, you know, try and force him back in when maybe do make a little line break and he's trying to fling the ball wide to get the ball to the likes of Teddy Thoma and their speedsters out wide, that maybe you cut off the outside pass. Dricko was fantastic at that, whereby you make them cut back in, you make them slow down again. So I think just line speed and communication and the integrity of the line around the ruck is key when you're dealing with a nine like Dupont.
Who should start for us?
At nine? I'd go with Murray still at nine. I think Gibson Park again. Look, he added a bit of tempo towards the end of the game, but I suppose naturally the Irish team was pushing the envelope. We're trying to move the ball. We're trying to get that try. I think, look, it's very, very close. You know, all the nines, like even, you know, the two lads who are in the Six Nations squad, Casey and Gibson Park. You know, Luke McGrath had an unbelievable second half against Munster. And basically, I felt control that game and won that game for Leinster. And he didn't make the squad. And then you have the likes of Cooney, Marmion, and Blade. I think there's very little between Gibson, Park, Casey, and the four those guys I mentioned. But at the moment, I'd stick with Conor Murray. Especially this game now, we'll see what happens at 10 as well. But you have Conor Murray, who was, 80-plus caps. I think Dupont has probably nearly 30 caps, but there is an experience with Talavera at 10 as well. So, I think Ireland might have the advantage if Sexton starts at 10 and Murray can start at 9, whether we like it or not. There was kind of shoots of hope, in the first half when we held the ball and we moved it wide and we stressed the Welsh defence. Hopefully we'll see more of that on this weekend. But I think a pragmatic approach as well has to be welcomed. And you're going to have to see Murray kick it at 9, or you're going to have to see whether it's Sexton control the ball at 10 as well. So, but I think Murray will start that at 9, and I think he's still the best man for the job. I don't think anyone has put their hand up and said that number 9 jersey is mine other than Conor Murray.
How far away is Craig Casey, do you think?
He looks really good. Looks really, really good. But we haven't seen him, prove it at Highland Cup level yet. So it's difficult to see how he'll do at international rugby. I've no doubt that he will prosper there. I've no doubt that he'll be a top class 9 there. But it's difficult for Farrell to throw him in first anyway. Maybe he takes a punt and says, I'm bringing Casey onto the bench and we're going to see what he does for 20 minutes against France. I think he'd do well. He's kind of a similar build to Dupont, actually. Probably hasn't shown as much of a threat at the line as of yet, but you see he's made a few little mini breaks with Munster. His pass is fantastic, very, very slick. He's quick to the breakdown. So obviously he's going to give your 10 an extra bit, and his kicking game looks decent as well. So I think he's definitely capable of playing international rugby, but as of yet, because of the lack of European Cup experience and maybe the lack of even Pro 14 experience last year, whereby I thought they should have played him a hell of a lot more, I think we haven't enough of him.
I have one last one for you. It's a comment from Brendan, wants to know, why is Cooney not in the squad despite being the form 9 since the Rugby World Cup? Is there something in Cooney's game that we can't see, that you see as a scrum half, that the Irish coaching ticket sees and doesn't trust?
No, honestly, there's nothing that I see that tells me that John Cooney's not capable of playing international rugby. He had an unbelievable year, obviously, his first year into Ulster, whereby everyone was wondering who's going to replace Pienaar. He was literally man of the match every game. But I don't think he wouldn't be allowed that space, and he wouldn't be utilised that space in international rugby. It's just a different level. He does bring the kicking game as well. I think he do a very good job playing international rugby, but I don't know why they have a preference over Gibson Park or why they have a preference over Casey yet. I don't know. I'm not privy to that. And to be honest with you, like I said, the probably issue is that Gibson Park, Casey, Luke McGrath, Cooney, Marmion, all these guys are on a very, very similar level, and no one has stuck their head above the parapet and said, I'm your man. So that's the issue for the Irish squad. And until there's someone who's Cooney probably did for a year and he didn't get picked for some reason. But now, at the moment, they're all on a similar level, and there's going to be constant debate. And obviously, everyone's going to have their preference as to how a 9 plays and what skill set he has. So I think it's up to one of those players to really put their head and their hand up and say, I'm the man. Tomás, Cooney did it before. He never got his award.
You've been great with your time, and I'm way over, but you mentioned the Montpellier thing. Do we not love our scrum halves enough in Ireland, the way that they do the Petit Général and the way they revere them, as you said earlier on, that like French rugby culture is better than our culture when it comes to what they do with their scrum halves? Like, it's clear because they keep producing this incredible talent line all the way back, and we probably need to invest more time and love in our scrum halves.
Yeah, I certainly wish I was loved more, but look, that's for another day. I think it's probably down to population as well, and just sheer numbers. Look, obviously the French population and the amount of teams they have, it just maximises the ability to produce multiple 9s. But you're right. You could argue that about England as well. You could argue that about Wales. It's just a cultural thing with France for some reason. But definitely, I think when you look at a rugby game, the number 9 actually has his hands on the ball the most. So he is the most influential player on the pitch, whether or not we like it. If he decides to pass, kick or run, he's going to influence the game more than the team. Obviously, we've transferred that, or a lot of the international teams and rugby teams have transferred the impetus and the influence onto a 10, whereby the 9 is just a conduit between the forwards and the backs. But definitely in France, it's the 9 is the main man, the 9 is the petit general. So it's a cultural thing, and I think it would be great to see a shift, not only in Ireland, but in rugby in general, to see the 9 being the more dominant and an influential player, definitely.
All right. Are France going to beat us on Saturday?
No, I think we'll make a win.
Right.
I think we'll be able to defend our threats, and hopefully we'll see Andy Farrell's influence in the attack coming to fruition.
Tomás, great stuff. Great to have you with us. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
Tomás O'Leary giving us some very nice memories of 2009. If you haven't seen that, we'll tweet out a friendly link there to the first half. It's unbelievable. The rugby quality is sensational. France make in stoppage time at the end of the first half, they score a drop goal to make it 13-10. It is one of the best halves of rugby that you'll see. It goes end to end, they're toe to toe, and there's loads of space. There's loads of space for attackers. They get the ball and they're not immediately swallowed up or smashed. It's like, oh, this is a game of skill as opposed to a game of brute force. Loads of comments, as I said, coming through. Stephen says he was asking about the most important part of a scrum half's game. Mike McCarthy, the former Irish lock, was asking about, is Dev Toner our succession plan at number 10? How are you, Mike? I hope you're well. Una says, can we get away with our usual kicking game against the French team? The answer is no, we can't. We can't just kick the ball back to the French and go, you're really good at the back there. that was a nice move that you pulled as you ran the ball in under our posts. Should Jemison Gibson Park start to live with the pace of Dupont and Jalibert? They're not going to start Gibson Park, are they? Ahead of Connor, the team is going to be the team. There'll be one change, or maybe two, but I think there won't be. I think he's going to back Earls to come out of his funk, because if you don't back the player, then his last experience is a bad game. You don't give him the opportunity to recover. Who was on the show that said he's been in dressing room since he was 16. He's a player's coach. Was that Brian on Monday night? Somebody said it recently anyway, and I think that I'd be surprised if the team selection shows much change.
Yeah, no, same as. But just on that France point you made, this seems to be the way when you look back at any of these old French games, is Ireland being entertained by France a little bit. Like when we did that classic M Club last year of the Brian O'Driscoll hat-trick game in 2000. The French were unbelievable in that game as well. It was just onslaught after onslaught and all these ridiculous attempts at trying to score the perfect try, which held them up in the end, and they would have beaten us in the end if it wasn't the case.
That try they scored on 9 is pretty perfect. It reminded me 100% of the Babas against New Zealand, the try that keeps getting shown again and again. A reminder, the Six Nations show returns live from 10:30 on all our social channels. Today, Neil Tracy is going to be joined by Johnny Murphy and Alison Miller to look ahead to Ireland against France, and we'll also be picking out the standout performers from the tournament so far.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.